Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News for this Wednesday, August 24th. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and joining me now, State Representative Jody Emerson, Democrat of Eau Claire, personal hero of mine, and here to talk to us about what we're going to hear in our next couple of segments. And that would be an amazing block of women who are running to hopefully join Representative Emerson in the legislature. Jody, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Now, you are in a, and I know you always hate to hear this, but you are in a relatively safe, or shall we say, strong Democratic district that cannot be said about so much of the surrounding territory, not just for gerrymandering, but, you know, simply demographics and other reasons. So people like you, they look to help with candidate recruitment, or at least talking to candidates, letting them know what to expect and so forth. So you've been at this for a little while. Tell me how that's gone, and how that's gone, especially since the Dobbs decision.
Yeah, so recruitment was really interesting this year because we actually got the finalized maps, pardon me, on the same day that we could start doing nomination papers. And so we had recruited a few candidates, and then they weren't in the districts that we had recruited them for. And so it was a very interesting, chaotic process for a few weeks there. But, you know, you've run for office before. It takes some time to process and think, yep, I'm going to do this. And I know the people in this area, in this area. And so with the last minute maps, it made it a lot harder. But boy, I tell you, when Dobbs came down, that really lit a fire under a lot of people. And the fact that we had the leaked document, we knew it was coming, really lit a fire under a lot of women, especially to get involved. You know, they say, you know, no decisions made about me without me. And so I think a lot of women really said, you know, I need to be at the table now. And, you know, I really take my hat off to the women that you're going to be having later on, because a lot of them said, you know, I've run for office before, I've lost elections before, some of them very recently too. But they also said, you know, nobody gets through on an election without having an opponent. And so I'm willing to put my name on the ballot. And they have just generated so much energy in that part of the state. It's really great to see. And it's great to see how they're working together too.
There was a concern that Western Wisconsin was going to, you know, continue to trend Republican because it's a suburb of the Twin Cities in the minds of many people. But as we've learned about the suburbs around Milwaukee and elsewhere, suburbs are no longer as reliably Republican because the Republican Party isn't what it used to be, especially for suburban women. So in talking about the women that we're going to meet next, you have Sarah Yacoub, who has run in the past against Shannon Zimmerman. You have Allison Page, who has run previously. You have Patty Schachner, who was a state senator and is now looking to get back into the legislature. And you have Danielle Johnson, so who has been active in political circles as well. So you are in a unique area, not only that trends may be changing there politically, but that you have no real rookies that you have to hold their hand through all of this.
Exactly. I mean, you know, sometimes updating them a little bit on, you know, what's happened in the most recent legislative session or something like that. But, you know, these women know how to run campaigns and know, you know, in Patty's case, how to win a campaign too. And as we see in the suburbs of Milwaukee, you know, it's these social issues that are having these suburbs tend towards blue. And so, you know, that might be fiscally conservative, but socially liberal. And it's really interesting to see the dynamics that are happening in those areas.
Well, we've put a lot on you as the incumbent in a mostly Democratic area, but how about the voters and the volunteers in places like Eau Claire? I know in the past, it has not been easy to get people at higher levels down to the volunteer level to go outside of their district, maybe knock doors in Altoona instead of Eau Claire, as the case may be. Would it be fair to say that some of the volunteers in Eau Claire progressive circles are a little more fired up and willing to put a little gas in the tank to help out some of these women?
They are. And they know that we're really crunched for numbers in the Assembly and the Senate. You know, one seat lost in the Senate and we lose, and the Republicans get the supermajority. Five seats in the Assembly and the Republicans get the supermajority. And with the new maps, that's a strong possibility. And so I've had several people say to me, you know, as you're going around the state, let me know. I'll be your your travel buddy. And you know, we're hoping to get carloads full of people to go to some of these districts that we really need to knock doors aggressively and get to know people and get to know the voters and the issues that are at stake.
And this is something that is not just a phenomenon around Western Wisconsin, but throughout the state. We'll have Kristen Lyerly on in our next hour, and she has spoken about some of the candidates for office out in that part of the state, and the same goes elsewhere. And to that end, you're probably leaving to knock on doors right now, too. So far be it from me to keep you from what actually is one of the more enjoyable parts of a campaign. Jody Amerson, state rep from Eau Claire. Thanks so much. Great to see you again.
Good to see you too, Pat. Take care.
All right. She has put the ball on the tee for four candidates who will join us after the break. You're up north. Welcome back. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and I am joined now by several candidates for legislature. The one thing they have in common is the region where this is all taking place, and that's in Western Wisconsin, more or less along the I-94 corridor. I'll have each of these candidates describe their district to you in a moment. But as we were saying in the last segment with State Representative Jody Emerson, there are no rookies here. These are people with experience, people with talent, and only because we know each other on a first name basis can I call them grizzled veterans of the meat grinder, and that includes Danielle Johnson, who again has been active in Eau Claire circles, and Sarah Yacoub, and Patty Schachner, and Allison Page. Ladies, good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So good to have you all here. So I'm just going to pick on you each one by one. And what, as I've done with a lot of other races and a lot of other candidates, I just want you to take a moment. You don't need me to rattle off your biography. You can say in a couple of sentences, what area you're running in. So Patty, let's start with you as a former state senator, from one senator to another. And that, by the way, kids, is what they call senitude. And yeah. Everybody who's ever been in the Assembly knows what I'm talking about. So Senator Schachner, I'm going to defer to you first.
Thank you, Pat. And thanks for having us here today. The area I am hoping to represent is District 28, which has been gerrymandered to include all of Polk County, Star Prairie Township, the village of Somerset, and most of the city of New Richmond. My biography is, over 30 years of community service in emergency services, from being an EMT to a death investigator, which I currently still do. I think for myself, my strongest point is in the people that I serve through the work of emergency services. I've not once ever been asked how I voted, nor have I ever asked how they voted. I just serve.
All right. Thanks, Patty. And Allison Page, tell us about the district you're running in.
Yeah, hi. I'm running to represent the 93rd Assembly District, which has been involves a little bit of remapping with the most recent mapping that's been done. So it now includes Pierce County, the part of River Falls that is in Pierce County, so Division Street and South, all the way down to Maiden Rock. And then over to the east, Menominee and Eau Claire, but doesn't include those cities, just kind of skirts the south of Menominee, the south of Eau Claire. So down includes Maiden Rock, Durand, Ellsworth, Prescott, River Falls, and those communities. Lots of rural area. Yeah. My background, I've worked in healthcare my entire life, starting as a clinician and for the past 25 years in administration. Most recently, people would know me as the CEO of Western Wisconsin Health, which I just retired from in February. And my other work, aside from my work life, has been on things that benefit children, education, and the environment. So excited about the opportunity.
All right. And Danielle Johnson, hi. Tell us about the district.
Hi, I am running in the 29th district. So that goes from the on the west, Hammond, Baldwin area, all the way through the vast majority of Menominee on the east and kind of north to Clear Lake. So a lot of rural area as well, which is where my heart is, absolutely. So I am a veterinarian. I've always worked in small towns. I've owned a veterinary clinic in Baldwin for the past 11 years or so. I have served on the board of Western Wisconsin Health for the past 7 years or so. So I've as soon as I started my practice in Baldwin, it was a big deal to me to give back to the community through volunteerism, through participation in our business and community events. And now, and I think wanting to serve in Madison and represent the 29th district is just an extension of my desire to serve the community.
And Sarah Yacoub goes last because she has the most unusual district. It's one that doesn't look like most because apparently in that one alone, for the longest time, you could be the incumbent and not live in the district. But regardless, you're still trying to challenge Shannon Zimmerman. So tell us more about that, Sarah.
Yes. So the 30th Assembly District goes all the way up to the northern border of St. Croix County with the town of Somerset. We go as far east as the town of Richmond and Erin Prairie. We don't include Hammond. They gerrymandered Hammond out, but we do include Pleasant Valley, Rush River, and O'Galley. And then to the south, we have a little nugget of Pierce County, and that allows Shannon Zimmerman to stop committing voter and election fraud to live outside of the 30th Assembly District. So should he win, which I hope he does not, he can start being a lawful human being.
Ah, that whole living in the district works well when you can draw yourself in.
Yes.
It is. Look, I'll be the first to admit it is rather inside baseball when you talk about district lines. But I at least appreciate when people ask why they're so convoluted, because then we get to say, oh, here's why. They were not always this goofy where they, you know, cut across counties and cut across towns and things like that. And Patty, you know as well as anybody serving in the legislature that, you know, in a minority role, you watch this, you want to tell voters all about it. But, you know, they also have their own concerns they want to deal with, not so much the mischief that's being made in the Capitol these days.
Yeah, the maps are really an interesting situation, really, when you think about it. And I look at my community. I'm born and raised in Somerset and have lived here my whole life. But the township of Somerset and the village of Somerset potentially will have two different representatives. So, you know, in the small picture, people are like, oh, that doesn't matter. But in the big picture, that's a huge deal because it is one community with two representatives, and possibly the two representatives aren't on the same page, which means then nobody gets anything done. And that seems to be what's going on throughout the state and many communities.
Essentially, it's built in gridlock. But as I mentioned, Allison, we are dealing with voters who want to know what you're going to do for them, less, you know, what has happened in the past. What are the concerns that you're hearing from voters, and how does that jive with your priorities if elected?
What I'm hearing from people is they're pretty sick and tired of elected officials not getting work done. We expect our legislature and our state government to work for us, and it's not working for us. The pandemic's been a clear example of that. our local governments, our organizations, our schools, our hospitals did not get the help and the support that they needed from our state legislature. The governor was willing. Our Department of Health is second to none, but our state legislature did not act. So I think people are frustrated by that. They really don't care as much about Republicans and Democrats, as they do about, are we getting stuff done and is it meeting my needs? Then the whole reproductive health thing, bridge too far. I think that has, people are very concerned about that, that this is an infringement on their basic freedoms and people aren't having it.
So to get back to the pandemic, Danielle, when you're talking to constituents, do you find that there's still this need to almost relitigate safeguards and things because there's been this right-wing mindset so ingrained that, you know, the safeguards were too far and harmful? Or have people moved past that now and have other issues on their minds when you talk to them?
You know, I honestly think people have moved past that to a large degree. I'm not hearing things like that, but it does exemplify what people, even though they're not addressing the COVID response specifically, they are definitely fed up with the division. That comes up very often where people are tired of people on one side and people on the other, and that there's no in-between problem solving. And that is really something that I think we talk about a lot when I'm at doors, is that the division between left and right is largely manufactured. And the fact of the matter is that we have way more in common than we have differences. And it really doesn't take much time for us to find that common ground. And that's where the problem solving lies, is finding where our common ground is and having rational discussion about it.
And Sarah, there appears to be more common ground than ever between Democratic leaning and Republican leaning women, or just others who look at the Dobbs decision and say, this is no longer a choice matter. This really is a matter of privacy. And your district certainly is one where we're going to be looking to see if that trend holds true, much like what we saw in Kansas. What's your sense?
Absolutely. Well, you know, as long as Roe v. Wade was law of the land, there was sort of the freedom or the comfort, if you will, to lean into other issues, other priorities. The second the Dobbs decision came down, given the inaction of our legislature, I mean, they cared so little about a law written in 1849 that dictates our access to healthcare that they gaveled in and out of special session in 14 seconds. This issue I'm hearing from people on the doors is very personal, whether you're male, female, transgendered. It's amazing, different age groups. It's amazing how this issue affects people on such a personal level. So I do think we're going to see people come out and vote like they haven't voted before.
Patty, does it get a lot of traction when we talk about the numerous times that the Republican legislators have either gaveled in and gaveled out special sessions on serious matters and taken these 9-10 month paid vacations over the last couple of years? Does that resonate at all?
Well, I think that doing a, Republican versus a Democrat type thing does not work. What people want to hear is the facts. So I looked at my opponent and I actually went through her legislative page and went through her legislative calendar. And through 21 and 22, she actually was working on policy in the Capitol 109 days through 21, 22. That is over $1,100 a day that she got paid plus mileage. People will take a look at that. For $1,100 a day, you better have gotten some work done. As a legislator in the majority party, she only has a 10% effective rate. All of us have worked in business and know that if we had employees that were only 10% effective, we wouldn't keep them. But for some reason, our electors don't pay attention to that because they've never been told. So now we have to figure out how to educate our electors and say, you need to do a job evaluation of your electors and see if they're working for you as hard as you are working to make sure that you have the right things for your family.
And Patty, your Republican incumbent is?
Gay Magnifici.
Okay. And we talked about Sarah running against Shannon Zimmerman. Danielle, your Republican opponent?
Clint Moses.
Okay. And Allison?
Warren Petrick.
Okay. So just wanted to know so that people, again, it would be, if I'm not going to use district numbers because it's something that catches people off. The lines have all changed. So I figure if you have just heard of all of these women and you see one of those names on the ballot, you're going to learn a lot about them in this hour and beyond and understand from all of them what the values are that guide the service that they would bring to a legislature that maybe would work for a living, you know, if we change the composition a bit more. More with them after this. You're up north. And while we are talking about websites and Facebook pages, let me tell you where you can find more information on these Western Wisconsin women running for assembly seats on Facebook. For Patty Schachner, you'd look for Patty for Wisconsin. For Allison Page, it would be Allison Page for Wisconsin State Assembly District 93. For Danielle Johnson, Danielle, the number 4, WI. And Sarah Yacoub, as we've long established on the Wednesday night show, can be found at Wis Mama Bear, because that Mama Bear image works. And we've talked to several others. Let's see, Christina Shelton. Who else were we talking to recently? And it basically is this is the year that moms, wives, and daughters, I mean, you've got busy lives already, Sarah, but you're stepping up anyway.
Exactly. There's too much on the line.
Mm-hmm. So this is a world now where we talk about your Facebook pages, and of course that invites all the usual toxicity that can come in the comment section. So you'd think where this would really happen better in any democracy would be through forums, through debates, through things like that. Sarah, any word on whether you're going to get to debate Shannon Zimmerman?
So I had an interesting conversation. Paul Rohde is quite the force locally. He owns a few restaurants, does a lot of really great charitable work in the community. And I reached out to him and he said, well, are you going to debate Shannon? And I said, well, I'd love to, but he won't debate me. And he said, well, why not? And I said, well, because he's chicken, and feel free to give him a hard time about it. And he graciously offered to host a debate at the FIPS. So I told him, name the time and place, or we know the place, but name the time, I'll be there. But if 2020 is any indication, I don't anticipate Shannon's going to show up.
All right. How about the rest of you, Patty? Any forums scheduled yet?
The only thing I have scheduled is with the Wisconsin Polk County Towns Association in October. And I'm not quite sure how it's going to work. They reached out to me, but they're going to send me the questions and my opponent the questions. We send them the answers, I believe. And then somehow it'll be just kind of a prepared nothing on the spot about town business. So, but you know, I'll take it how I can get it. I would love to have a lot of debate and stuff, but the Republicans won't step up to the plate to do that because they don't want to be held accountable to their words. And it shows.
Allison, what's your situation?
Again, I'm willing to debate anybody, anywhere, anytime. And I absolutely think the public deserves that. I did just hear the League of Women Voters was planning a forum, the Chippewa Valley League of Women Voters. And I heard back from them last night that my opponent, Warren Petrick, has declined to participate. So then therefore they won't have an empty chair. So that then I am not able to participate in that forum. They will, however, they'll do a videotape of any candidate and use that on their website. I'm imagining that Warren Petrick is a very busy man. I know he sings the national anthem at many, many different locations, and perhaps he's booked up and too busy to participate in democracy. I'm not sure about that. There's also going to be a forum over by Eau Claire, the energy and construction, I think, a forum. I plan to participate in that. And then Wisconsin Public Radio is doing interviews and video or audio taping. And I think they'll be playing some of that information on the radio, but not any kind of a back and forth dialogue with my opponent.
And then finally, Danielle, how about you?
Yeah, that's interesting, Allison, to hear that you got a decline. So the same organization, the Chippewa Valley League of Women Voters, I responded to their request. I have not gotten a decline from Clint Moses yet, but I also am not really expecting, I hope I have the opportunity to debate Clint Moses. In fact, I saw him at the Dunn County Fair, and I was at the booth at the Dunn County Fair. He walked by and he came over and introduced himself, and I was very appreciative of that. We had a very pleasant exchange. As he was walking away, I said, I'll be ready to debate you anytime. I thought I saw a visible cringe, but then he did not turn around and take me up on the on that offer. So I have officially thrown down the gauntlet, but we will. I'm hoping for a response, because I'm ready to do that anytime.
And Sarah, you had something similar in that, you know, with the local newspaper, because Shannon Zimmerman didn't return the questionnaire, then they just didn't do anything at all. So it's essentially that either these groups or these media outlets are letting Republicans suppress your ability to get a message out.
Well, and it's not just our ability to get a message out, but they aren't answering to the public. They're not answering to the voters. And that is being insulated by entities that don't print the representative or the candidate declined to participate. So when they decide not to hold the debate with the empty chair or not run answers against non-answers, it really insulates corrupt, lazy politicians who don't have to answer to anyone. And it's really a disservice to the public.
This is something that we've really first started to notice in 2010, the Tea Party year, when Republicans decided to, by and large, stay within their own media bubble, control their own message. Allison, your example is spot on that, oh, well, you can send a video. In a video, nobody holds you to account. Nobody asks follow-up questions. Those are commercials. And so I feel like, especially being back in media, we have properly moved the balance off of the candidates and onto these groups. And if you are a group out there looking to start one of these or host one of these, you need to follow through all the way. And that means having the empty chair. Or that means if you're a newspaper, and I know white space scares you, but you put a big block of white space right next to Sarah's answers, because they did not do your readers the courtesy of responding. And I'll talk about this on Friday more with Mark Jacob from formerly of the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times. But the Cleveland Plain Dealer yesterday put a big white box there with an X through it to show how they were not going to cover something with J.D. Vance and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis visiting because of all the preconditions they put on it. And Patty, I know that you can't possibly get to every door in the district, but it's tough enough to get media coverage in Western Wisconsin as being part of the Twin Cities market without having groups or media outlets not be as forceful in trying to get both candidates to be forthcoming with their voters.
Well, I think it's really frustrating when I didn't know this. Let me backtrack a little bit. I didn't know this really until I became a senator, how politically leaning different media outlets were in the local newspapers, and how, because you pay attention to your local newspapers. For us, it was part of the River Towns group, and then the New Richmond News went away, and we don't have local media. We just don't. So then you start paying attention to some of these smaller media outlets, and their political views are clearly on their editorial page, on how they cover events. And it does not do our communities, nor does it do democracy any favors, because folks don't know what's going on. And again, if you look at legislatively, if you are in the majority party and you have written, 100 pieces of legislation, and 100, and of those 100, only 4 make it into law, and then you say the Democrats are causing the problem, what you're doing is writing legislation to get vetoed. That is not your job. Your job is to collaborate with everybody and write policy that helps people. And when you're writing policy to get vetoed, you're playing politics and you're not playing policy.
Well said. Let's get to policy then, Allison, and talk about what things you would want to be proactive on. And, let's go ahead and live the fantasy that you might still be in the minority, but that majority Republicans will be better at giving collaboration to go and giving bills some public hearings. What kinds of things would you like to propose, and what kinds of things would you think could possibly turn out to be bipartisan to a degree? What would you tell the voters you're going to work on?
I think first and foremost would be healthcare, access to healthcare and access to reproductive rights. That's got to be job one. That's a number one freedom that is being taken away from the people of Wisconsin and reverting to an 1849 law that was written by a bunch of men when women couldn't even have the right to vote. And it was legal back then to rape your wife. So what the heck? So that has to be job one, I think, would be a priority. And I actually do think that there's an opportunity to collaborate with people on that. The vast majority of people in Wisconsin think that abortion should be legal, at least in some cases. So beyond that, the threats we're facing with our environment and forever chemicals, something has to be done about this to preserve our water, air, and soil for future generations. Priority three, I think, is our education system. If you look at what's happened in the last 10 years that my opponent's been in office in Madison, there hasn't been an increase in investment in education when more and more we need to have children get to adulthood with that emotional resilience, knowledge, and skills to be able to compete. And then I would say, lastly, the thing that's on all of our minds is the state of our democracy. This is just simply not acceptable to have people elected who are not collaborating to make good things happen for Wisconsin. So a priority of mine would be to go to Madison and infuse the professionalism and the grace and the decorum that we should expect of all our elected officials and be a model for that and try to transform that culture.
Danielle, from a small business standpoint, what do you say to those who say that a lot of small business owners have been strong or lean Republican people over the years? What are they getting in return versus what you would like to see a legislature do for small businesses in Wisconsin?
Well, yeah, right now it's incredibly hard to find workers to work and everyone's feeling the pinch. I'm feeling the pinch. And so on the state level, the legislature could do a lot to help small business owners. If I had the ability to make sure that my employees had an affordable place to live and someone reliable to take care of their children for an affordable price, we would get people into the workforce. But if a good paying job doesn't allow you even a place to live and care for your children, how can we expect a thriving economy?
Sarah, the governor unveiled a plan for what he would do with a record surplus that Republicans are sitting on, locking away and hoping to spend on tax cuts geared toward the higher incomes for next year. And the governor's program includes tax cuts, but for working families, but also that assistance for veterans, for caregivers, for daycare. Is there a chance that kind of targeted use of the surplus will resonate with the people you're talking to rather than just Republicans waving tax cut? And it's all summed up in two words and people, gravitate toward that instead?
So the short answer is yes. Republicans don't campaign on giving our tax dollars to the U-lines and other billionaires in Wisconsin. They actually sell themselves as Democrats in substance, if you listen to what they're saying. But, as we are facing a period in history characterized by inflation, we curb that inflation by growing the economy. And we grow the economy by freeing up the middle class, the working class, growing that class and giving them the freedom to live their lives. So whether that is the freedom to take the job that they want with affordable housing and healthcare, I really admire that Governor Evers is working hard to reduce taxes for working families. I think the number was 10%, which would be huge. But Governor Evers has done such a nice job of exemplifying the leadership that all of these women with us today, but that Allison was talking about, of putting people before politics. So when the Democrats had the legislature, 40% roughly of the bills saw the light of day. That doesn't happen with the current leadership.
No, it certainly doesn't. And hopefully things could change. with some good people like you being successful next time around. Sarah Yacoub, Patty Schachner, Allison Page, Danielle Johnson, thank you so much. It was great. We'll check in with you a little later on and hopefully be able to talk to you as incumbents somewhere down the road here. Thanks again.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks.
Thank you. It was fun.
Great seeing you all. We will be back to wrap up this hour next year. Up North. The song that Patty Schachner chose for the last segment, Keb Mo, was it Strong Woman? I think that's going to be a theme.
Good Strong Woman.
Good Strong Woman. I think that may be a theme as we move forward, because we've talked to several of them, and we will talk to one more of them, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, coming up in our next hour. But I wanted to come back to something that I mentioned briefly, and it is going to come up again Friday when I talk to Mark Jacob, as we talk about the way the national press is covering news and politics in this day and age. But I know we won't have a lot of time for this one particular story, so I want to share it here now. And that is how the Cleveland Plain Dealer just put up white space with an X through it to show how they were not going to attend an event, even though it is a big event by, you know, one of their candidates for governor, J.D. Vance. And he was joined by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, and they held an event. They invited the media, but they put these preconditions down. And Chris Quinn, the editor of The Plain Dealer, responded with an editorial noting that DeSantis was in Ohio. This was last Friday. And Chris notes, our reporters were not there because of ridiculous restrictions that DeSantis and Vance placed on anyone covering the event. The worst of the rules was one prohibiting reporters from interviewing attendees not first approved by the organizers of the event. And as Quinn notes, when we cover events, we talk to anyone we wish. This is America, land of free speech, at least America as it exists today, maybe not the America that would exist under Vance and DeSantis. Think about what they were doing here, Quinn writes. They were staging an event to rally people to vote for Vance while instituting the kinds of policies you'd see in a fascist regime, a wannabe U.S. senator and maybe a wannabe president. Another over-the-top rule was one reserving the right to receive copies of any video shot at the event for promotional use. That's never okay, Quinn writes. News agencies are independent of the political process. We do not provide our work product to anyone for promotional use. To do so would put us in league with people we cover, destroying our credibility. Yet another of the rules reserved the right to know in what manner any footage of the event would be used. We are news people. We use footage on news platforms. But this rule set up a situation in which reporters could be grilled on their intentions. Chris Quinn continues in the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I'm scratching my head over one other rule that prohibited reporters from entering the hotel rooms of any attendees of the event. If someone invites a reporter into a hotel room for an interview, what's the harm? Anyway, we didn't accept the limitations because they end up skewing the facts. If we can speak only with attendees chosen by the candidate, we don't get a true accounting of what people thought of the event. You get spin from the most ardent supporters. The organizers told the Washington Post they just wanted to keep people out collecting footage for non-journalistic reasons, and that they'd be willing to waive their rules for legitimate news outlets like the Washington Post. But that rings hollow. If you are speaking publicly, people are going to use what you say to help you or fight you. That's how politics works, and we don't accept discretionary waivers to unacceptable rules. And on it continues, but just to note that that's why there was not media at this event. And there have been similar media restrictions put up by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis at other events, by Doug Mastriano as well, running for Pennsylvania governor. And I can't speak to what kind of rules and restrictions have been at Tim Michaels' events, but needless to say that that's something that we're going to want to monitor as well. it again, as I said with the candidates, is part of a media control mindset on the part of right-wing politicians who enjoy speaking within their own bubble where there isn't fact-checking and where they can craft a message, but that ain't journalism. You know, journalism is covering something, reporting honestly on it, and I mean, truly the We Report, You Decide that's been perverted so much by Fox News is what it should actually be. And that does not mean reporting, you know, both sides. That's not what this is about as well. And it's why I wanted to come back to a point that Patty Shockner raised and Sarah Yacoub hinted at it as well, where local media, you know, don't run questionnaires if they don't get it from both candidates and they don't hold the other candidate accountable for not wanting to actually make their views known. That was part of the reason we created Up North News in the first place. It's that you deserve to know, any one of you deserve to know where your newsroom is coming from. If they are trying to play things completely down the middle, which does mean sometimes giving both sides coverage equally, even though one side doesn't really deserve it, say, you know, tearing down democracy. You deserve to know that part explicitly. And you do see that in the far right media bubble. But as Patty was getting at, what you don't know often is how news decisions are crafted because of how a news director feels, or how an editor feels, or a publisher, or an owner. And that happens much more often than you would think. You don't know the degree to which, whether it's advertising concerns or personal concerns, those things skew what it comes out as well. The answer is not to turn off all news. The answer is not to distrust all media and refer to it as fake news. The answer is to take in information from a variety of sources, and in time, you will come to understand who's being a straight shooter with you, even if you don't necessarily agree with everything they say or do. It's what I based Up North News on in starting it, was that it was going to be a lot like the conversations I have with Republican-leaning friends or strangers who still stop me out for dinner or in the grocery store or whatnot. You may not agree with everything when you ask me about something going on in the news, but you know I will never lie to you, that I will try to inform you. There's nothing, there would be great if we could see that from some right-of-center news outlets, rather than, you know, the fire-breathing, truth-skewing coverage that we so frequently get. There was once a time where in American media, they were two newspaper towns, and you knew the one newspaper had a Democratic point of view and the one had the Republican point of view, but you could see them both for a nickel apiece, look at them, and, you know, reach your own conclusions. It is tougher today, despite the fact that there are more choices than ever. But at least consumers can make this choice. When a news outlet doesn't cover something because of restrictions put on by a politician of any stripe, the fault is not in the news outlet that didn't cover it. The fault is in public officials who need to be much more accountable to you. Dr. Kristen Lierley joins us in our next hour. You're Up North.